Hello, and welcome to Faithfully Memphis. I am the guest host today, and my name is Father Terry Street, where I serve as senior pastor and rector at St. Philip Episcopal Church with the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee. Every Thursday at 8 a.m., this program tries to connect our listeners with Memphis and regional interest and matters of faith. In our first segment, we recognize and present a saint of the day. In many churches, especially liturgical churches, there is a liturgical calendar that designates certain feast days that recognize and celebrate various saints of the faith that have had a spiritual or religious impact on the church and its people. They include popular or well-known saints like St. Mary, St. Augustine, or St. Francis, but also some more obscure saints in church history. But today, we will be recognizing a most unusual saint day. In fact, they are not exactly saints. It is the Feast of Michael and All Angels. It is a recognition and celebration of angels. When I was younger in college studying the many religions, I was a devoted Christian then, but frankly, I really thought that compared to some of the other religions, Christianity was kind of boring or lacked the mysticism and the mystery found in other religions, especially the Eastern religions that I was fond of. But boy, was I wrong about that. In fact, I later realized that Christianity is full of mysticism and mystery. One of the great mysteries is the recognition of angels in our faith. In fact, angels are mentioned over 273 times in the Bible. According to the Bible, angels were present when God created the world, and they have taken an interest or a role in the lives of human affairs throughout the Bible. They have been messengers sent by God, and they express many emotions, including joy and longing. The Bible indicates that angels are too numerous to count. In the Episcopal Church, we actually recognize angels in our Holy Eucharist liturgy by these words: "Therefore we praise you, joining our voices with angels and archangels and with all the company of heaven." The Bible identifies two prominent angels, the Archangel Michael and the angel Gabriel. The Archangel Michael was apparently like the head honcho angel, I think. He's said to be the captain of all the heavenly armies. His name means "who is like God." He protected Daniel in the Old Testament and actually fought with the devil himself twice. Gabriel's name means "God is my champion." He is presented numerous times as a great messenger from God. He also visited Daniel in the Old Testament as he interpreted many of Daniel's visions. But it was Gabriel that delivered the prophetic good news of Jesus to Zechariah, the father of John the Baptist, and to the Virgin Mary and Joseph. Many people throughout the ages, even today, believe that angels are real and have continued to come to us as guardians or messengers. It is not uncommon at all to hear personal stories of guardian angels protecting us or giving us messages through divine visitations. Before I became a priest, I was a counseling therapist, and I heard countless stories of these personal divine interactions. For centuries, artists have tried to capture various images of angels on canvas and in other artwork mediums, but most of us, well, we've never really actually seen an angel, although many of us have probably seen angels unaware. They are probably not those, I'm thinking, they're probably not those cute little chubby babies with wings that seem to be so popular in our culture today. Angels are still a mystery and are mysterious in their visitations. I believe that there has always been a thin line between heaven and earth, between the human and divine. I believe angels cross these thresholds every day. And the bottom line here, I think, is that God's loving care watches over us directly and indirectly, in plain sight and mysteriously. We are reminded that God's love and the richness and the variety of God's creation goes far beyond our own knowledge, our vision, or our imagination. In Psalm 91:11, it states, "For he shall give his angels charge over you to keep you in all your ways." Now that is something to celebrate for this feast day. Yes, Virginia, there really are angels. Thanks be to God.
Torn apart, deep as you can, baby, dig for it all. Yeah, yes, young at heart, that's the way I was at the start. Now the rust has thrust itself into my soul. Well, never will you heal my wounds. Love me, baby, the best you can do, and I'll be your sweet loving mama all night long. Whoa, 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 whoa. Never will we ever be free from the demons in the dirt and the cracks between our baby, you sure make it look good day. Never, oh never in this life will we ever be free from the song of strife. But I'd rather be here than where I was. Oh, cut me loose from this worn out track, from the caboose derailed this stack. I ain't never looking back.
Our very special guest today is musician, singer, songwriter, recording artist, performer, and producer, Grace Askew. Welcome, Grace.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's so good to have you. Our listeners cannot see this, but I'm smiling ear to ear. It's so good to have Grace, and we're so grateful that she is here with us today. Grace, I'll have to remind you about something.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. This is a blast from the past. In the year 2007,
mm-hmm.
about 13, 14 years ago,
yeah,
I was the chaplain of the Barth House, which was the Episcopal Student Center on campus at the University of Memphis. And, you know, having that 60s and 70s in my blood, I was thinking how neat it would be to have a coffee house night once a month. And so I would invite musicians, guests to come, and then there would be open mic after that. Well, it was actually successful. Both faculty and students really enjoyed that. But frankly, I ran out of favors. I ran out of invites. And so I called my friend John Gloria.
Yes.
And shout out to John. John was and is a guitar teacher. And I think he was one of your guitar instructors.
For several years throughout high school.
Yeah. So when I asked John, did he have anybody in mind? He said, oh, actually, I do. There's a young lady who is really remarkable, and I think she's going places.
Aww.
And you might ask her. Well, I think that John asked on my behalf, and thankfully you said yes.
That was such a magical space to perform in, I remember.
It was, and it is still magical.
It's still, yeah.
Yeah, we have renovated that space, in fact. And it's even more conducive to performances and special events.
I'd love to go back.
Oh, sure. Good. Well, we would love to have you back. I'll have to talk to you later about that. well, gee whiz, I introduced you as musician, singer, songwriter, recording artist. Golly, performer.
Had to wear a lot of hats.
And producer.
Producer, yeah.
As they say, you've come a long way, baby.
Okay. I can only hope.
I have to say that when I first met you then, you were younger, of course, but you were very shy.
Yeah.
You could certainly tell that you were a woman of strength even then, and your music was something that was very different. It was soulful. It was from the heart.
Thank you.
It was sincere, and you made a mark on me that very first time. But goodness gracious.
Now here we are.
A lot has changed
since
that performance at the coffee house.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about what has transpired since. Let's see. I guess were you a senior in high school or maybe going into college?
2007. I was just out of college.
Oh, okay.
Actually, I had just moved back. I decided to drop out of Loyola, New Orleans, to move back to Memphis and pursue music full time.
Okay.
When you met me.
Okay.
I think that's right. Something like that. But that's around that time that I just was gung-ho about embracing full-on that artistic identity, and there was nothing else I wanted to do. You know, I think I'd been living in Midtown above my grandmother in this little tiny, I was renting a bedroom inside of an apartment. And I was just in love with being a musician for the first time. And I felt like I'd found my people and my identity at that time, you know, because high school, it's like, you know, you want to find a group that you belong with. But it wasn't until I got into like the real world and kind of started playing in the little bars and clubs in Memphis that I found my people and could surround myself with songwriters all the time, which was awesome. And Memphis is just so racked with talent. It's just insane, the amount of amazing songwriters there are. But fast forward to now, I think it's like 11 years later. Is that right? Gosh, I don't know.
13 plus.
Okay, yeah. Don't ask me to do the math. I've got, I'm married now, and I've been, I've got a son, a 1.5-year-old, and I'm due for a girl this Christmas.
Congratulations.
So thank you. And I've lived in New Mexico for a little bit and been touring for the past, 11, 12 years by myself, mostly in my big diesel Ford truck. And just that's the life I've always wanted. And now it's taken a hard right turn with being a mother.
Yeah.
Which is fine. You know, the older I get, the more I'm confidently embracing whatever season I'm in and not trying to manipulate the season I'm in or be ungrateful for it. I'm just trying to like accept whatever season I'm in. And I think that's something that I've never been really good at until now. So
how do you think that living in Memphis and experiencing the Memphis music scene and even the the Delta. Mm-hmm. How do you think that has influenced your music?
Tremendously. I mean, I feel like that was what I embraced more than anything in my kind of artist journey, so to speak. Because I knew it was something that would set me apart from day one. Memphis has got that melting pot. It's got the blues roots. I mean, really, Clarksdale and the northern Mississippi area is what birthed American music.
Yes.
And no other country can take that away from us. They can emulate whatever else they want. They can manufacture better cars, better whatever. But music, no. They can't ever take that away from us, our Delta blues roots. So to be a sixth-generation Memphian with a lot of Mississippi roots, like there's an Askew, Mississippi, my forefathers, whatever, great-great-great-grandfathers founded Longtown, Mississippi. So there's a lot of Delta roots that I really want to I want to dive deeper into it, but it's certainly part of my sound.
Oh, yeah, and I think you can tell. Especially that what I call that sort of soul of the Delta, that soul of the blues. Mm-hmm. That I think is so soulfully felt from your songs and also from your performances.
Oh, thank you.
What sort of music influences has been there in your life? Other artists that have had some impact on your own music?
I think a lot of it helped to have an older sister. You know, she's six years older than me, and I grew up kind of, you know, listening to whatever cool music my cool older sister was listening to.
Right.
And so when she moved to Manhattan, and she was, you know, had a lot of cool artist friends in Brooklyn, and that was when I was really open. My eyes were open to a lot of indie and alternative music, and on top of already falling in love with Elvis and Johnny Cash and Jeff Buckley, and I was just kind of immersing myself in all kinds of genres, really, especially Cat Power resonated with me. Mm. She's an indie kind of alt rock artist. And, you know, for the first time when I heard Cat, I thought, wow, this is a woman who isn't belting out, isn't doing these vocal runs, isn't doing over singing. You know, I think a lot of the female artists that you listen to on the radio, pop was huge when I was growing up, like Christina Aguilera, Britney Spears, all that stuff. So that's all I knew until I heard Cat Power, and she has this breathy, just easygoing sound that I was like, wow. So I don't have to be like that. I can be my own kind of sound. So that changed my perception a lot.
In a sense, it sounds like you found your own voice.
Yeah, through Cat, for sure.
Yeah. I also read that some of your other influences was Townes Van Zandt and Blaze Foley.
Oh, yeah.
Those are not household words, but those are icons of the music industry.
Yes, for sure, songwriters. Yeah.
And you also mentioned Tom Waits, which is actually one of my favorites, but I was so interesting how Tom Waits had an influence on your music. He has a very different style.
I love that. I love that he was just always himself, even through the 80s. You can't tell his 80s albums were made in the 80s because they're just still so Tom. And that's what I've always just admired about him. It helps me embrace my own sound no matter what is trending at the moment. So very inspiring.
You know, I have to bring up The Voice.
Yeah.
The period where it was in 2013, where you were asked to be a contestant on that very popular show then. And in fact, you were very favored. You did not win. Mm-hmm. And frankly, that probably was a mixed blessing. But I wonder if you would talk a little bit about that experience. And let me say, when you came out and you did These Boots Are Made for Walking, I thought that was the coolest thing. And it was a cover for the old Nancy Sinatra song.
Right, yeah.
But you know what, Grace? You came out and it was like a musician coming out. Here I am.
Yeah.
This is me. And it was really a commanding, if not demanding, performance that I think said to the world, here I am. And, of course, I always liked that song.
Yeah.
But, it was just, I don't know, it was just kind of sassy, but it was soul-filled. Mm-hmm. And in part, it was really you. I know it was a performance for the voice. But I just felt like that you took that on too. Anyway, if you could, I had to get that in. I still love that.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I thought it was cool that the show let me make it my own with playing my slide resonator guitar as the instrumentation with it. And obviously the amazing band backed me up for the show. But it was cool to give my own, you know, Delta twist and represent Memphis in that sense. And I tried my best to represent Memphis throughout the whole time I was on the show, up to the knockouts when I got knocked out. I did a Tina Turner. Well, they made me say it was a Tina Turner song, I Can't Stand the Rain.
Oh.
But it's actually an Ann Peebles song.
And yes.
It was me paying homage to Memphis, but they made me say this is a Tina Turner song. More Americans wouldn't know Tina Turner. So that was a little annoying, but it was like boot camp for how to be a rock star. Like, you are training for 3 months for 90 seconds of your life.
Wow.
That's how intense it is. And by the end, I was ready to go. I wasn't enjoying myself. It was a little too much pressure. And it's like fame for the sake of fame. It's a very watered down version of fame because it's like I'd been there for a couple months and I was experiencing like huge amounts of the tension. And it was like, but you don't know me that well. Like, you know what I mean? I want to feel like I've earned my attention. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So it didn't feel like that at the end, but I'm incredibly grateful that I did it. And, my mom pushed me to do it. So, so yeah, no regrets.
You, granted her at least that,
yeah, got
that wish. And careful about the future ones, right?
Right, yeah, I know, totally.
I'm curious, after especially these boots are made for walking, I was wondering if maybe that's how you made that connection with the prestigious boot company that that was a sponsor of you sometime after that. Was there any connection at all?
No, I just had a photographer friend for Stetson. He worked for Stetson Hats. And also for Tecovis and Wrangler. And so he got me the Stetson modeling gig where they actually do like a blog post and a backstory on your life. And it was like a 16-hour shoot all throughout New Mexico for Stetson Hats, which was like a dream come true. And then he got me hooked in modeling for Wrangler, and then came the Tecovis photo shoots, which is an Austin-based brand. But now they've got stores in Atlanta and Nashville.
Oh, wow.
They're getting huge. They're actually Dallas based. But yeah, it was just, it's so funny how the internet, you make these lifelong friends and then one thing leads to another and then another and then another. I'm so grateful to have this day and age of like being in that social media world, to where I can make those kinds of connections pretty easily. So.
Grace, you are a prolific writer and apparently a prolific recording artist too. I was looking at your website and I don't know if I counted all the, well, I'm going to say albums because I'm old school. I know that people don't call them albums anymore,
but
I still call them albums. How many albums do you have? And then there's there are a number of singles that you released.
A lot of singles. I don't know the number of singles, but I think it's 7 or 8 albums now. A couple of them EPs. So just, there's EP and then LP is obviously the full album.
Right.
But I think it's 7 at this point, and I'm 11 years of releasing music. So, yeah.
You've been busy.
Yeah, definitely trying to. I get crazy. I go crazy if I like, I'm not constantly doing, you know, something that's going to move me forward a little bit.
Going back a little bit, tell us a little bit about your your journey of how your music has transformed over the years or your life and career?
My music, I guess, has just been more like discovered in my own sense. I've kind of discovered what my specialty is, what helps me stand apart, you know, what is my voice as an artist, basically, and what do I tend to write about more? You know, and I tend to say it's like a Southern Gothic kind of Americana. I like rootsier, kind of darker topics, Tom Waitsy kind of style.
Yeah, sure.
Williams. I love listening to Williams writing. So, yeah, I think it's just developed into knowing who I am and knowing my voice far more. And that just only comes from writing a lot and not being afraid to write bad stuff. You know what I mean? A lot of artists that I'm coaching right now are like, they're afraid to write bad songs. And I tell them you can't, that everybody, John Prine, you know, he wrote bad songs in the beginning.
Yes.
Bob Dylan wrote really crappy songs, I'm sure, in the beginning.
Yes.
I'm sure he did. So I just, that's what I'm trying to help others see now after having been writing for 15 years. It's like you have to start somewhere.
That's actually great wisdom for life, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Is that sometimes our mistakes or even not our best is a learning ground.
Yeah.
And it's still progress.
Yeah, totally.
And that's a different way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than a failure, it's an opportunity somewhere.
It's an experiment.
Right.
It's never a failure.
Right. And it may not be realized until later.
Right. Yeah.
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 In my counseling and now in my pastoral counseling, I really try to bring that up a lot.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, rather than focus on what was unsuccessful or even a mistake in their lives, how can you see that as a part of your life?
Yeah.
You know, how can you learn from that?
Mm-hmm. Totally. Dare to suck is what I like to say.
Yeah. Now, I read somewhere that at least at one point in your life, you had made a commitment to write a song every day.
I am doing it right now.
You're still doing it now?
So I did it for 2 years straight, and then I had Wolf, my son, and then I took like 3-4 months off, I think, and then now I'm doing it again. And I'm on day 290 today of 365. Like, and I, you know, it's like people message me and they're like, do you understand like quality versus quantity? And I'm like, but it's not about that. When I'm writing a song every day, it's like I'm in the gym. That's my training ground. That's not me trying to be perfect.
Yeah.
It's not about good versus bad in the end. It's not about the product. It's about the process, which is exactly what you were just talking about.
Yes.
It's not about the perfection, because perfection really doesn't even exist. Because if I write a song right now and I'm like, that is a perfect song, there's going to be some Joe Schmo on Facebook being like, well, I could have written that chorus much better. That's not a perfect song. So it's like
always
it's subjective.
Right.
You know, so why not even just take that off your table and focus on just consistently creating?
Yeah,
that's all that matters.
And frankly, it's a part of the skill, too, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Gifts are kind of a very minute part of being an artist. It's the skills that you develop.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you have obviously been skillful and gifted. You know, you mentioned your son. I wanted to ask you, how do you think that your new motherhood has had a role or an impact on your music, certainly your life as an artist? What do you think's going on there?
Yeah, it was intimidating when I first found out I was pregnant, but now that I've been through it, and he's a year and a half now, it's like I get you lose yourself in motherhood, and then you come back out the other side having a much wiser sense of like, what do you want to spend your time doing and not doing? And you become so much more particular and decisive in your life about what you're going to say no to, and more confident in that. Cause it's like, my free time is not, it's a luxury now. It's like, it is an immensely, it has to be productive.
Yes.
And so I don't take advantage of that anymore. I mean, I do take advantage of it. I don't take it for granted.
Right.
Is what I mean.
Right.
I don't take my free time for granted. It's not this thing that I can just kind of freely go to, you know, whenever I want. So motherhood's taught me to just be much wiser with that. And it's actually been better with my creativity.
Sometimes when we're so focused on a certain responsibility, like parenthood or especially motherhood.
Yes.
It teaches us to be more intentional.
Yeah.
About the things that we feel like that we need to do or that we need to continue.
Yep.
And that could be helpful.
Totally.
Even though it's still very stressful.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. You know, it's something that I've always wanted to have in my life and experience that. And it's the artist's job to take on a lot of different identities.
Yeah.
I firmly believe that. And so one of those identities is motherhood for me, obviously. So it's just part of it.
Oh, I love that. Motherhood is really a part of your
artistic identity.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, that could be very helpful to a lot of artists who think that they are on total hold because of motherhood or because of parenthood, that their life is over as they knew it,
right,
rather than seeing it as a part of the continuum.
It's yeah.
And really a resource,
mm-hmm,
for the artistic nature.
How many of us lose that childlike sense of wonder as we grow up and playfulness in our craft? So it's amazing to see my son have that, and for me to learn from him, you know, how to write with a little bit more wonderment and curiosity and have that in the world around me, you know?
Well, you must have found something worthwhile in it because you are now expecting again.
Yeah. Back to back and then I'm done.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, we're very excited though.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
I heard that you're doing December or something.
December 22nd.
Oh, okay.
Christmas. My husband's also a Christmas time child, so he's going to be able to commiserate with her on having a Christmas birthday.
Oh, good. Okay. All right.
She won't be alone.
What a gift that will be for this Christmas. Well, you know, especially being a priest, I'm going to be interested in the question of how spirituality or faith has played a role in your music or in your career or, mm-hmm, or in your life.
Yeah, totally. It's a huge part. I think artists are more in touch with that side than a lot of other people, just because we have to be. We're creating something from nothing for a living. So there's a lot of unknowns in what we do, and it's constantly, it's a little scary, but it's also having this trust and belief in something that's going to work out, you know, when you put forth an effort. And having this belief in a higher power throughout my life has been really helpful to just push through.
Yeah.
Because we can't predict what's going to happen with, especially with art and an artistic career. It's just no A to B. So it's been nice to have something that's not me to like ground myself in, you know.
I always thought that most art and artistic endeavors is really an expression of spirituality,
mm-hmm,
at some level.
Totally. Yeah.
That's why people have been doing it for so long.
Right. It's like listening to Mahalia Jackson. How can a voice like that exist and there's no God? Like, I'm sorry, y'all. Mahalia Jackson's voice blows my mind.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that is a sign there's something greater up there creating.
Yeah.
Like, she just blows me away.
It's a little bit of heaven found in that voice.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
All right, I got a cheesy fan question for you. Sorry.
That's fine.
I am a huge Leon Russell fan.
Oh,
I read that for a time you worked with Leon Russell.
Yes.
Who was actually, a lot of people don't realize, is that he was frequently seen in Memphis and in the Memphis area.
Mm-hmm.
He worked with Ardent and did some recordings here. But you had an opportunity to work with him?
I just played a show. I opened up for him down at Dueling Hall in Jackson.
Oh.
And then his son, who looks a lot like him, I befriended him in Austin, and we went on tour together, and he played guitar for me, TJ.
Oh, cool.
Actually, his name's Teddy Jack Russell, which is funny.
Really?
Yeah.
Teddy Jack Russell. Oh, my goodness.
But I think he lives in California now. But anyway, Leon, I opened up for him, and, I didn't get to talk to him much. He had handlers at the time, obviously, and just was whisked off into his tour bus. But phenomenal. Still even – that was maybe a couple months before he passed, and he was still just on fire on stage. Just – it was a spiritual experience.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
He was a true performer, and that was from the heart, too.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think some of his albums, some of the best music – that's in the music world today.
Oh, absolutely. I used to kind of make fun of his voice when I was little and I didn't appreciate it.
That raspy.
Just like the way he pronounces his words. He like swings out the vowels and stuff.
Yeah.
It was weird, but I really, you know, obviously appreciate it now.
I was so sad to read about his passing.
Yeah.
It just seemed like especially a child of the 60s and 70s, it just seemed like another door closed.
Yeah.
But boy, did he leave so many doors open. I mean, he left a legacy.
Absolutely.
Of some wonderful music.
Absolutely. I didn't realize he was way bigger than like Willie Nelson in the 60s and 70s. Like he made it before all those guys really did.
Yeah. Yeah. And very versatile.
Yeah.
It was the album, I think, called Carnival. It still is one of my all-time favorite albums.
So good.
Yeah. All right. Sorry. I had to get my fan thing in.
No one ever brings that up, so it's nice.
Oh, goodness. I read this somewhere that there is a new documentary on your life and your music and work. Tell us about that.
It's pretty much done. He's in the final editing phases, but we've been shooting it since before I had Wolf. I had just found out I was pregnant when we started filming out living out in Eads, Tennessee, at this little tin roof, one story house. I'm not going to call it a shack, but it's a rugged house.
Right.
It was just
an artist shack.
An artist shack. Yes, exactly. An oasis. On 100 acres out there.
Oh, wonderful.
We were, just loving being out there. And then it just captures everything that I love about where I grew up and the motel pool I swam in. And it just takes you through who and what and developed, Grace Askew, the artist. And he actually went out to New Mexico and we shot a lot of the documentary out there as well. So it's going to be fun to release that.
Oh, good. Yeah. Do you have any idea when that might be released?
This fall is what he told me. So,
okay.
Yeah. I don't know. We're in fall now, so we'll see.
Well, that is very, very exciting.
Yeah. Thank you.
And adds to your legacy, really.
I can only hope.
The story of your life, the story of music.
Yeah.
Well, I'm almost afraid to ask, but what's next?
What's next? You've got to have this baby, I'm going to have this baby girl. And
yes.
And just building towards a more fulfilling career. Because I remember being out on the road and for a month at a time, over a couple months. And I was in California at the time doing interviews and playing a lot of amazing venues. And I called my dad and I was like, this can't be everything. Like, this isn't, everything's great and I should feel amazing, but I don't. And this doesn't feel super fulfilling for me. I know a lot of artists get fulfillment from that. But at the end of the day, it's like, that's not my personality, I don't think. So the pandemic really taught me what's important to me.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't tour. I couldn't play. Nobody was. So, and I realized that was just sharing everything I've learned from being a full-time artist for, 12, 15 years. And that's what I'm doing now. And with my one-on-one songwriting coaching and then developing that out into programs and workshops and then eventually like immersive luxury retreats in like places like Clarksdale, Mississippi and
wonderful
and Santa Fe, just beautiful, really cool places all over the world. So that's kind of the bigger picture path that I'm working towards. But it's just, not every artist has to have this goal of being on a record label and being signed and going to festivals. I think I had that goal for a long time and it didn't feel good to chase it. So why would I do that?
Right.
It's like, what feels really good at the end of the day to follow. And that's helping others, from what I've actually like gone out in the world and learned the hard way,
Yeah. In a sense, giving back, I guess, in some of your writings and I've listened to some of your interviews, you have talked about, some years ago, a part of what gave you the energy and the creativity was being what I would call a road warrior.
Yeah.
And, hitting all the bars and hitting those really wonderful sort of music mecca.
Yeah.
But obviously that has changed because apparently your creativity, your energy is not just from the road.
Right.
Or not just from those experiences.
Right. Yeah. And I think the pandemic changed a lot of artists' perspective on what can I keep doing that's going to sustain me,
Yeah.
So you have to get smart, work smarter, not work harder. And right. I was working really hard for 12 years.
Yes.
And I want to work smarter. So.
Oh.
And that's kind of where I'm at now. And be a good example of, like, daring to do something that's not really out there yet for my kids, you know. So I'm creating a program for artists and non-artists can work with me to help them be more creatively courageous in their own life.
Now, you actually have a mentoring or consultant business now.
I do, yeah.
But tell us a little bit more about that.
I've been doing it for 2 years, but really in the last 8 months, it's been developed out into like jumping in and learning by doing. We actually write songs, and in under an hour, we complete the song. So it's like an easy win.
Oh, wow.
And I teach, and these are people who are in the corporate world. They don't own a guitar. Like they have never written a song in their life, but they want to feel what it's like to be like an artist and to feel creatively free and open with their self-expression. And I think a lot of adults are stifled in that sense. And I want to be the person who can help guide them back to reactivating their creativity. We're all born with it, you know.
Yeah.
We never lose it. It just gets really stifled. So that's what I'm doing right now. And it's been really rewarding and just fun.
Wow, what a wonderful giving back opportunity sort of a giving from your life and being able to share that with others.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's a Daring to Suck podcast. We've got one season out with 8 episodes, and I'm about to launch the second season. So if you want to hear interviews with people who have written hits for Nashville, producers that have gone on tour, you know, just it's amazing to the people that I get to connect
with. Oh, that sounds very interesting. How do we access that?
That's on Spotify or iTunes, but it's Daring to Suck. And it's just
Daring to Suck.
Daring to Suck.
I love it because we were just talking about that. That it really is okay.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of my motto these days.
I love it.
Just advice and lessons and stories from fellow veteran working artists is what the whole show surrounds itself around.
Right.
So, yeah.
I see that you brought your guitar today.
I
hope that means you might play something for us.
Absolutely.
Here at the end of the interview.
Yeah.
Can you do that for us?
Yeah, sure. I'll do something off. This is off the new album. Well, EP.
Yeah. Sorry. now I've corrupted you.
This is called Cactus Lady.
Oh.
She was a real sunrise, a real surprise to the town. Somewhere near Tularosa, there's a place where everyone knows her, and come up just as Rose sings her way down. They call her the Cactus Lady, long dark hair braided as her thoughts. Dances like a coyote to an old beat up hand-me-down jukebox. Cathy's a lady, might be a little crazy, but the Cathy's a lady, the biggest thing to ever happen. Her dreams are big as the railroad, running through the backyard every night. She's sitting around here twisting, thinking of all she's missing, just trying to make a living, not a life. Prickly pear margaritas and votives of Jesus burning at the bar. Flies buzzing on 8 ball. She tries a dozen outfits on before it's showtime for a course.
Beautiful. Thank you. Grace, you are a beautiful woman, and you inhale and exhale beautiful music.
Thank you.
And thank you for being with us today. I have to tell you this. You know, your great grandmother is a parishioner of mine.
Really?
Miss Ellen Burl.
Great grandmother.
Is it great-grandmother?
Grandmother. Yeah, she's grandmother. My grandmother.
Okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
You had me confused. I was like, she's my
grandmother. Sorry.
She's grandmother, yeah.
Grandmother. Goes to my church at St. Philip. By the way, she is so beloved.
I love her.
She is known as sort of the matriarch of love.
Really?
There. and really, I think she's one of the living saints. But when I was first asked to host this show, I immediately thought about you, and I thought about how neat it would be, you know, to interview you and have you on this particular show. But I thought, oh, you know, Grace is never going to say yes to this. And I almost, almost played the grandmother card to get her back. but I didn't have to because when I called, you were so gracious to say yes, as you did 13 years ago, when you volunteered to come to the Barth House to play for us and share your gifts, your early gifts, then. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah.
This ain't my daddy's guitar. I beat it half to hell. It ain't pink and sparkly, but it taught me how to be myself. I ain't gonna be a superstar, mixing my Wranglers with diamonds. But I'm tired of trying to play your part, chasing you.
The next segment in our program is called Stump the Priest. And that is where a question is maybe frequently asked by others of a priest or of me. And so I'm going to say that probably a frequent question asked is, what makes your faith so strong? Hmm. What makes your faith so strong? And people are usually looking for like a secret answer, yeah. you know, or they're looking for some theological wisdom. And this is what I say. Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so. Little ones to him belong, they are weak, but he is strong. Yes, Jesus loves me. Yes, Jesus loves me. Yes, Jesus loves me. The Bible tells me so. It's kind of ironic, but it was a children's song mm-hmm. that I found an unyielding, unfailing faith that Jesus loves me, gave me really the foundation of strength and faith and hope that Jesus loves me. And you know, when I heard that song, I believed it. Mm-hmm. And that made me feel connected. I've never felt alone since then. I've been lonely mm-hmm. and I've experienced loneliness, but not totally alone. I've always felt like that I belonged. Right. And it gave me that, you know, that solid ground. Mm-hmm. And truly, it's been a song in my heart my entire life. Mm-hmm. So, yes, Grace, it really is about the music.
That's right.
It's about the music. By the way, that's part of the lyric of your No Rock Bottom.
That's right.
It's about the music. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons why music is so important in the Christian faith and throughout the history of the church, but it certainly has been for me. And so, yeah, that's my answer.
Love it.
To them, found in a song, and I believed it. Now, that's not to say, that's not to say that I haven't had pebbles in my boots mm-hmm. along the way. I certainly have, and I think you probably have had some pebbles in your boots.
Yes.
Along the way as well. But it, you know what, it gives me my sense of direction. I know who I am and whose I am. And even though I may take a roundabout way, I know where I'm going.
Right.
And I'm very grateful for that. In fact, I have to say that I think that many times a strong faith is a gift. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a gift to have, I think, that kind of faith. And I am thankful for that gift that was given to me so many years ago as a little boy. Well, you know what? I'm going to change the rules here a little bit. I mean, I'm going to turn to you, Grace, and I'm going to stump the musician today. I'm going to ask, what advice or wisdom would you give to budding artists or struggling artists today? Or maybe even, what advice would you give to that young girl?
Yeah, to myself.
Yeah. That I met 14 years ago.
Don't ever forget why you started in the first place.
Hmm.
That's your why. That's what's going to get you through those you know, rejections and those rough days. And it's going to keep you going, because that's what matters more than anything. Our legacy will never be status, fame, power, wealth. It's going to lead. Our legacy is what we shared, our gifts that we shared. And just that has to be the most important thing in my life and in budding artists' lives.
Yes.
If you don't love songwriting, if you don't love the process of it, then I'm sorry. Good luck, but you have to really love it.
Yeah.
And not care about, you know, not be super attached to the outcome.
Yeah.
To last in this industry. So I hope that helps.
And it also sounds like through our discussions, to be yourself.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's a given. That's a given.
To be authentic to,
yes,
to yourself. That doesn't
absolutely
mean that there aren't diversions, and sometimes we need to go various routes, you know.
Absolutely, yeah.
But
yeah,
to be
that's
yourself.
What matters too, for sure.
Yes. Thank you again.
Thank you. This has been a joy.
Oh,
I love a good conversation.
It has been fun. It has been fun. We'd like to remind our listeners to find the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee on Facebook and on Instagram and at edwtn.org. You can also listen to past episodes of Faithfully Memphis on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. Please like and subscribe. I'd like to end our program with a very ancient blessing. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he shine his face upon you and be gracious to you. May he turn his countenance upon you and bring you peace. This is Father Terry Street for Faithfully Memphis. Until next time, stay safe, stay positive, and keep the faith.